We'll do clap sing.
Yeah, rolling. All right, cool. I don't know about you guys, but and that's howdy roundabout, all you shaggy goose egg boys, and welcome to what's this called? Al Pacino's prison scene, where three college students who know nothing about anything.
No, this is Jake Ferrier.
Think about nothing scene. While everything, and that's why they say think about it. And what is today's movie, guys?
Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roger Rules.
Yes, that Jake so tastefully introduced us into.
Hey,
Jesus Christ!
Power of editing, baby. They'll never know.
They.
Just bleep out your entire sentence.
Look, I'm looking at you. Look, you can see me.
Yes.
Hi.
I smell like onions.
Welcome to,
I haven't bathed in 3 days.
Al Pacino's prison scene in 3D. Three dimensions.
And we have a little set here. I don't know if you can see that. Look, it looks pretty good. We have some lights over there and whatnot.
Visual sound.
Video is what I meant to say.
Yes, you can see our setup.
Yeah, you can see
part of it if you're Chris.
The faces of the stupidity that you've probably been listening to on Spotify.
And if you like The Weeknd, then there's a blinding light that I keep looking into for some reason.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. Welcome to Al Pacino's prison scene. This may be your first time. Well, this is your first time watching us. Might be your first time.
It's your first time watching us while we do the episode.
Yes, to the people only listening.
For those of you who can't see.
For those of you that can't see, you can see us.
For those of you that have the lack the ability to watch us on YouTube. Because you don't
have
I
can't even look at you.
Because
he's talking directly into my ear.
If you let me finish. Because you don't have Wi-Fi, well, then I don't know how you listen to this episode. So
that wasn't even, like, funny enough to be continued.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You know, I want to give my analysis on this show as a whole for a second. It's like...
Not a show, it's a podcast.
It's three people, mostly two people, me and Jake, tried to tell a joke, a different joke at the same time. And it doesn't work. Because that's not how conversations happen.
Yeah. Oh, look, you can see me do things now. Ooh.
And then Kyle's the one who redeems us. That's my summary on... That's the synopsis on this entire podcast. If this is your first time watching us or listening
to us.
Stop
looking at the camera so much.
Me?
Everybody.
This is weird. Hey, this is the first time we're doing this.
The only reason Chris is looking at the camera is because we have the little monitor flip so that
we
can see each other.
Nailing this intro.
Yeah. Speaking of nailing.
I don't even know who you are.
All right. So, did you guys like the movie?
What movie?
What was the movie again?
We haven't
Diary
said yet.
Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roger Rules.
Oh, we did
I
say
swear
that.
I've already said that.
We did say that.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. Alzheimer's.
Well... That's insensitive. I was a big fan of the books growing
up.
I remember.
I only had the orange one.
The do-it-yourself one?
Yeah.
I had that one too, but I traded it for a pencil.
You traded an entire book?
Yes!
Was it a special pencil?
It was a cool pencil.
What?
It was a cool pencil. But also, here's the thing. I already did everything in the book. So some dumb loser.
Yeah. That's funny. Did you do it in pen or pencil?
I don't remember. Probably pencil.
Give me a second. Yeah.
We literally can't do anything until the recap, so we're just waiting on Chris.
We're going to leave this in.
What are you looking for?
I thought I brought something in. And apparently I think it's still in my car.
What was it? Jumper cables? Because I saw jumper cables in your back seat, which I thought was very odd. I went to go get the tripod, and I opened it up, and the tripod was sitting on top of jumper cables. And I was like, that's strange. Those don't go there. They were used,
too. What was it, Chris?
I saw part of a nipple on them.
Can we cut that out?
Mm-hmm. You know whose nipple it was.
Hey. So...
What?
Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick Rules.
The question is it Roderick Rules or Roderick Rules?
Roderick's Rules.
Wait.
Like that's apostrophe
not,
S.
It's Roderick
no,
rules.
It's not apostrophe S. Look Roderick. Look I'm looking at it right now. It's Roderick Rules. Jared, you can put the title up.
Is Jared or whoever?
Are we assuming Jared's editing? Whoever, we have not asked him.
Whoever's
then.
Editing this, put it up like right here. All right, they can see the. All right, cool.
I really hope that whenever that happens, your hands are completely off of where it should be, and it looks so bad. I hope that's
no. It's Roderick Rules.
I know. I yeah.
No, Kyle.
Stop.
For those of you who can't hear or smell, I'll leave it at that.
I'm farting.
God, it got so warm under this table.
It's all the gas leaking out of Chris's butt.
Okay. Recap time.
I'm looking at you.
This is a Wikipedia, isn't it? Is it? Yep. See, I knew it without. This is weird. I usually sit next to Chris. I don't like.
Yeah.
I don't like this. I
all
like
right.
Next to
now I'm sitting.
Hey,
next
should
to Chris.
We real quick explain like, real quick explain what this podcast is?
I already did time. That.
No, what the, like the.
I already did that. Okay. At all the right. beginning of the episode, I went three college students who know nothing about anything.
Oh, you did
talk about that. Nothing about anything.
We're gonna have to cut this out. This is not good. All right, so Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick Rules,
or according to Kyle, Roderick's Rules.
That's a funny callback from 2 minutes ago.
Yeah, I know.
That's hilarious. For those of you who can't remember,
okay. You already made that joke. Diary
of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick Rules, the movie, not the book, starts out
book review
in
book review
in a skating rink with Greg Heffley Damn and bucks. His family, the Heffley family, enjoying a nice family time at the skating rink, and he and his good buddy Rowley are like you know trying to be cool at the skating rink and. Greg sees this girl named Holly, who is a new girl at the school, and he's like, oh, I really like her. I want to go impress her by
yeah, yeah. By skating up to her.
By skating up to her and
waiting on the slow dance.
Waiting on
because Roderick said
yeah.
Hey, slow dance.
Yeah.
And then Greg is like, eh. But then Roderick's like, are you ready to rock?
Yeah, he takes control of the DJ stand.
Okay, yeah, so.
And then Mama's
Greg's
like.
Greg's brother, Roderick, sees that he likes this girl and says, hey, in like 2 minutes, they're going to start this whole slow dance thing at the skating rink. And how about you go skate up to her right before, you know, they start this? And then. You know, ask her a dance. She can't refuse to
if
dance.
If you refuse, you lose.
Yeah, yeah. And so Greg goes over to basically pressure this girl into dancing with him. And then right when it hits all the slow music, Roderick hacks into the DJ booth and starts playing rock music. And so everybody's like skating crazy and scooping him up and all. And then all of a sudden, Greg's mom gets on
Greg!
Like.
Heffley.
The PA system and says, it's okay, your dad will be right there. And his dad scoops him up and he looks like a total doofus in front of everybody. And then we cut into the main movie. And
I'm not yawning at you. I've had a long
yeah,
day.
Yeah.
What if that fell?
Yeah.
Oh, I would have been upset for him. Yeah.
Yeah. And so,
I didn't tap it that hard.
And so we cut back to the Hefway family at the house. And
yeah,
Greg's like, hey, you know what? Sixth grade was bad in the first movie, but I feel like seventh grade is going to be pretty good. And,
yeah, he says in the first movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Seventh grade is going to be pretty good. You know, good I missed my first shot with Holly, but I'm gonna get it next time. And so he and Rowley go home and they're watching TV and Roderick's asleep. And all of a sudden the TV goes on to starts talking about this talent show in their town. Where like it's going to be like televised on public TV. And Roderick's like, oh, hey, I have a band called Loaded Diaper. Maybe we can get on this televised talent show and it will be our big break. And so what?
No.
Okay. And so while Roderick is trying to, you know, practice and make himself famous locally, Greg and Rowley are trying to make themselves famous globally by going to what was in 2011 the brand new invention called YouTube, where they like, you know, try to get some hits, try to make some monies off of that YouTube revenue, like which, we're trying to do now.
Which, by the way, anytime somebody refers to getting like views on social media or whatever, and they refer to it as hits, I know they're either extremely fucking old, or the movie was set in the late 2000s. Mm. It's just interesting. You know.
Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, so you know they're both like trying to be famous, make a name for themselves, and all the while this is happening, their mother Susan Helfley is making a name for themselves in the paper that she writes, because she writes a parenting column in the paper about her kids, and she's like, hey, my kids are kind of pieces of shit. I want to make them not pieces of shit so I can write not piece of shit stories about them. And so it's sort of kind of how it happens. And so she takes out some Monopoly money and she's like, hey, Roderick and Greg, I know you guys don't like each other, so how about I give you this Monopoly money? And so every time you do something nice for each other, yeah, she calls them mom bucks. Every time you do something nice for each other, then I will give you one mom buck, which can be exchanged for one real dollar. And so with that incentive, they try to kind of spend more time together, but Roderick still kind of, you know, kicks him around, and Greg's still very annoyed at him. And so time passes. And their parents go away for a little bit. I forget where they go to.
Rick Riordan.
What was it?
What?
Rapid Rocks. I was genuinely trying to think of
Rick Riordan.
But what is it?
Rapid Rocks.
It's like a water park.
Okay, yeah. So like, basically Roderick and Greg are left home alone for a little bit. And they're like, okay, this is you know, a way to test our trust and see how you guys have matured as brothers. And so Roderick's like, all right, I'm gonna throw a party. Greg, don't get involved. And Greg's like, okay. And so he brings his friend Rowley, and Greg's like, hey, I'm gonna tell on you. And Roderick's like, no, I'm gonna punch you. And then Rowley's like, conga. And so everybody starts hot dancing, babes. And they there's hot babes. And Rowley and Jake.
Rowley is Jake.
Rowley, hey. Not Rowley. Sorry. Roderick and Greg start to kind of get along during this party because they're having fun together. Yeah. They don't normally do that, and so they have a great time. It's awesome, and they pass out. And they go to sleep and they wake up the next morning and they're like, oh no, the house is a mess. What are we going to do?
Oh no.
Mom and dad's going to be home. And so they work together to clean up the house. What's going on?
Keep going.
What's going on?
We're on a time limit. Let's go.
Okay. And so anyway, they get the house cleaned up in the nick of time, but the only thing is that the bathroom door was written on. Can you fucking stop whatever you're doing?
Keep looking that way and I'll stop. Keep going. Keep going,
no!
Chris!
Alright. If you do it again, I swear to God.
I haven't done anything yet.
So, anyway.
I've tried to do something.
Nice.
The door is written on, right?
Yeah. Says, and
so they're like, Roger oh rules. Shit, everything was like cool. We were getting it all cleaned up, but how are we going to take care of this door? And Roger's like, I got it. There's a spare door in the basement, so they replace that door with that door. And so they come home, and everything's fine. Everything's cool. And Roderick and Greg have bonded after this, and they have made a pact that they were not going to tell their parents that they threw a party. And so after this happens, they really bond together. Roderick helps Greg with school in a way. He gives him like a paper that he like made a year ago for his class, but it sucked. But instead of Greg being like upset about it, Greg's like, nah, it's fine. Thanks for helping. And so, you know, they actually start hanging out and being good brothers. And so the mom starts to get suspicious about the door, because the door that they replaced doesn't have a lock on it. And so she goes to Roderick and she's like, hey, Roderick, door. And Roderick's like,
I don't know about door.
And so she's like, okay, I'm going to go ask Greg. And she goes to ask Greg, and Greg's like, okay, I got to play it cool because I don't want my brother to think I'm a narc. And so he immediately sells both of them out. He just spews the truth because he's a wimpy kid.
Yo.
Roll credits.
yeah, movie ends. No, but so Susan, the mom, like starts to pitch a fit, and he's like, hey, please don't get Roderick in trouble. Like he is wanting her to not ground them, because not for the punishment, but because he doesn't want Roderick.
Sorry, I tried to hold it.
Because he doesn't want Roderick to, you know, stop being friends with him. And so Susan's like, okay, well, as long as you boys keep looking like good brothers for my article, then I'll keep it safe from your dad. And so they're like, okay. And so next night, she brings her like bosses from the newspaper she writes for dinner. And so Roderick and Greg are like, oh, hey guys, we are good brothers. We are going out for good.
We are good brothers.
We are going out for good brother fun. And so Roderick takes Greg out for a night of pranks on
goofs and gaffs.
Yeah, some goofs and gaffs. One might
say goofs and gags.
That involves fake vomit in a parking lot. And it's really cool. They have to run from a mad gym teacher, and they bond because of that. And they come back home. And they're like, haha, we are good brothers.
We are the strongest brothers.
To their mom's boss. They're like, haha, yeah, we had fun. And they're like, oh, I'm so impressed. And so the dad comes in. He's like, hey, my wife's boss, would you like to see pictures of my stop motion films? Okay. And
it was just pictures.
Yeah, I know. But like, he makes little like Harley. Civil War and reenactments with little figurines.
Burritos are yummy. Yeah,
and so he's like got the camera that he's like made these pictures with. He plugs it up to the TV, and then he's like, "Hey, I'm going to stream this to my living room TV in front of my guests without first seeing what is on the camera." And so, he puts it up on the TV. And there are all the pictures that Greg
took. There are all the pictures.
There are all the pictures that Greg took of he and Roderick having a party and having a good time. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what?
Where? Roger, can you explain your picture?
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, why were you guys having a good time? And then they're like, well, Greg said that he wasn't going to say anything. And then mom's like, well, I wasn't going to say anything. Dad's like, I knew there was a lock on that door. I'm going to go take a shit.
Ourselves out.
I'm gonna go take a shit in a bathroom that has a lock. And so
they were not taking a shit.
Nice.
All I'm saying.
And so anyway,
the downstairs bathroom.
The brothers divide again because the trust has been broken. And
see how I did that?
Yeah.
And mom and dad say that you guys are grounded, and they're like, okay, we're fine with that. And then they say, and Roderick, you cannot perform at. You cannot perform at the talent show that can give you your big break. And so that's when Roderick really loses it because it crushes him. And he turns to Greg and he's like, you may be my brother, but you'll never be my friend. And so with that, they are sent to their grandfather for a few days at the retirement home to keep them company. Mm-hmm. And in that time, Roderick steals Greg's diary. And also Holly, the girl that Greg likes, is at that same retirement home visiting her like grandmother. And Roderick sees that and sees that this is a perfect time to get back at him. This is a perfect time to get back at him. And so he takes his diary and runs over to Holly to read to her all the stuff that Greg has wrote about Holly, about her loving her and stuff. And, you know, there's a whole gag scene where Greg has to run out in his underwear to retrieve the diary. It's very embarrassing for him. But yeah. Throughout all of this, Roderick is really the only person who is still sour about their broship. And the time comes for the talent show, and the parents make them go anyway because Rowley, Greg's friend, is in it. And they're like, you know, support the community because I need to look good for my article, basically. And so this is painful for Roderick because he's having to watch his band, who he started, perform without him. And it crushes him, and it still crushes Greg, even though Roderick has gone back to being a shit brother to him. And so in the meantime, Rowley was going to go on doing this like goofy magic show, but his partner dropped out. And Greg doesn't want to do it initially because he thinks that it's going to make him look bad in front of Holly, who is in the audience. And once he finds out that Loaded Diaper, Roderick's band, is performing without him, he's like, hey, Mom, I will help Rowley and like sacrifice my middle school reputation for Roderick's happiness if you let him play in this talent show. if I help Rowley. And so they make that deal, and the magic show actually goes pretty well, not in the way they intended to. They kind of make a fool of themselves, but they play along with it, and so it seems like it was a comedy act. And you know, Holly actually seems to be impressed by that. And then Roderick goes on and he just jams out, and Mom dances and everybody cheers. And
If he's happy, she's happy.
Yeah, the dad says, hey, they're both happy. We're all happy. And so we go to the end of the movie now, where Roderick is driving Greg to school like a good brother, and he gives him the tape that he recorded of him running around in his underwear at the retirement home chasing Roderick for his diary. And he's like, hey, here you go. And thank you for being a good brother. And so movie ends with the broship repaired, and middle school continues for Greg Heffley.
Yeah.
The end.
Time.
That was my way to do the thing.
Sorry,
guys. In case I don't feel like doing the edit thing that you said. What?
Yeah, I'm sorry. My brain's slow, but that was funny.
Yeah?
Just the idea of he finishes up his recap and he goes, oh!
All right. Boys and girls. What's this movie about?
This movie is about what makes a relationship sustainable.
Yes, I agree with Kyle.
See, here's the thing. I agree with you. And I think that I may relate to this more than either of you.
Mm-hmm.
You this film as a whole.
You do have a brother.
I have two. Mm-hmm. And I was the eldest.
Do you have a brother?
I have a stepbrother. Well, I have two stepbrothers.
Okay. I don't have a brother of any kind. Except for these brothers.
You have a sister, right? Do you have a sister?
I have a stepsister that I have not talked to or seen in like 3 years. I don't know. I haven't talked to her or seen her in 3 years.
She cute?
Is she cute? And I have a half sister.
Look up Chris Whitehead's stepsister.
Jesus Christ.
Okay, I'll do that.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
But yeah.
You have a half sister?
Half sister.
Yeah,
what?
She's 13.
Oh, I'm not interested.
Anyway, yeah, I agree with you, but I think that that doesn't really come. I don't think that that hits the nail on the Whitehead until.
Do we introduce ourselves?
Yeah, no.
No,
we did it.
I'm Kyle.
That's what I thought was off about this.
Okay.
Jake doesn't like introducing people, apparently.
Okay, we can do the intro after we film this.
Or we can just keep going. Anyway, there's a moment. Ooh. Until the party, after the party, and then they break up, and then Holly is like, that's part of the deal. She goes, you fight and you make up, you kiss and you break up. You're in, then you're out. You're up, then you're down.
You're hot, then you're cold. Yes, and you're no.
Right.
Yeah. While Greg is at the retirement.
In his underwear.
Yeah.
This conversation is happening.
Really?
No.
He is wearing underwear.
No, he's not.
Well.
He is wearing underwear.
Okay, yeah.
Supposedly.
While he's at the retirement home, he meets Holly, and they actually talk for the first time and realize that they are in very similar.
We're talking to each other.
In very similar. Family situations.
Yes.
Like she has an older brother and an older sister and a younger sister, just like Greg has an older brother and younger brother, and they act the same way.
And she goes, it's part of the deal.
Yeah.
And it really is. And, you know, I'm the eldest of
So you're Roderick.
I'm Roderick. I wish I was as cool as Roderick. Let me tell you right now.
I wish I ruled. As much as Roger. Yeah. I'm the eldest of five.
You're as much as... I will say, if it's any consolation,
one biological sister.
Yeah, but she's fake.
If it's any consolation, Jake.
What's her name? Michelle?
Jesus
fucking Christ.
If it's any consolation. If there's any constellations...
If there's any constellations, Jake, you are more of an asshole than Roderick.
Preach it, brother.
Hey, well, you know what? You brought me Jimmy John, so what does that say about you?
What does that say about you? You were, like, tormenting me throughout the entire recap, and I brought you food.
What does that say about you, Chris?
That I'm a fucking pushover.
But you know what? It's okay, because I'm like Dom, you know?
Family.
I go.
Family.
But yeah,
love those movies, man.
Yeah, it doesn't really hit home until Holly has that little quote, that interaction with them, because even all the way up before number one, can I just say that Greg kind of deserves all the stuff that Roderick does to him.
Oh yeah, well he especially in the first movie, he is a little asshole,
dude. He is, yeah. And this movie too, like Manny brings out the little ball of like tinfoil, and he's like. What the fuck am I going to do with this? Mm-hmm. You're dumb, little brother.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw this in the trash, like right in front of him. And the kid's three. Yeah. No idea of abstract thought. Like, praises his older brother in the same way that Gregory praises Roderick, you know?
Yeah, and there's a really interesting thing that Greg talks about around the second half of the movie is... Well, there's a part where, like, Roderick brings home this new guy that they have coming into the band. He's an older guy. He's been doing the whole rock scene for a while. What was his name?
Billy Crystal.
Yeah, Billy Crystal. And he's just, like, a washed-up rocker. And
do I smell pot roast?
Yeah, yeah. And so his dad doesn't like him from the start, but that's because
he is
the image of what he thinks Roderick is going to be later. And there's a, like, in the second half of the movie, Greg even illustrates this to us in his diary that his dad is afraid that Roderick is going to turn into Billy, and subsequently Greg turns into Roderick, Billy.
Right.
Same thing with Manny.
Which is kind of fair.
Well, yeah.
Because he says he's like sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
But
and Roderick is like, ha ha. And then Riley and Greg are both like, ha ha.
I think what saves that is the actual like relationship side, because instead of just looking up to someone who constantly denies you, you want to follow in their footsteps even more because you want to understand what it is to be like whatever it is that makes them think that they're so high that they can, that you are below them.
And it's a difficult thing too. Again, I'm kind of speaking from experience more so than you two can. It's at least in my opinion, hey, this one goes out to you, Jefe, if you listen. Probably don't. Anyway, love you, bro. Is that I struggle with this, too. My relationship is not amazing with the middle child. It's gotten better when I moved out. But, you know, it's rough. I think especially at this age difference. Like, when I was in high school is when he was in, like, elementary school, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, like, this element of, like, oh, I want to be cool. But you've seen pictures of me. I was a little bitch.
Yeah.
But I want to be cool.
Was? Hey. Well, no, continue.
I want to be cool, but, like, my little brother is going to embarrass me.
Yeah.
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 There's a lot of that goes on here. But then that kind of creates this distance. But then also the little brother at the time is trying to reach what he wants, what he's trying to reach my level of coolness or whatever.
Yeah, so I think we're skirting around what we're trying to get at here. Why do you think it is that younger siblings embarrass you so? And why do you think it is, I would say almost more importantly, the younger siblings look up to you? Why is that?
Well, for one, I think it's the same reason we talked about in SpongeBob. Mm-hmm. Like, these are our idols. Just because they're not parents,
yeah,
I think there is like this innate, attempt at a friendship with this part of your family,
especially
with your siblings.
If you grow up in a family with like an idea that like I'm your parent, not your friend,
right?
Like you can't have that. Unfortunately, there are some families where, like, it's an idea to be a parent that you can't have that kind of, like, friendship relationship with also having a good balance of like, being a parent.
Right. And so...
disciplinarian.
Yeah, yeah.
You end up with seeking this friendship with a sibling. But when you're this age, you don't quite know who you are as a person. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, you try to be someone you're not. You try to be them because when you see the older sibling, you look at them as successful. Again, I think innately just the nature of that relationship.
Yeah. Well, I think just given like there's obviously in your mind a difference between parents and siblings, right? I mean, there's the obvious difference that, you know, one of them actually is a parent, one of them's a, you know, brother, sister, whatever. But I think there's also just a differentiation between what you associate with both the parent and the sibling. And I think the sibling represents more so, especially when you're a kid. And I mean by a kid, I mean like, you know, younger than in high school. They represent more so what you could be. And I think there's also there's a countercultural element as well, because, you know, when you're growing up, your parents are the culture, right? They are the law, and there's
I am the law,
and there's always the bit of the rebellious nature of youth that that causes you to just go against that,
yeah,
by its essence. And so I think because there's a different categorization in your brain between siblings or even like cousins who are younger ages as well, that and between the adults, just because that's different, I think there's always going to be a different element of that relationship. And I think it just has to do a little bit with that rebellious spirit. And it is an aspect defining who you are, because to know who you are, first you have to know, well, I would say to develop yourself, you need to know first where you are. And you need to know, secondly, where you're going. And to know where you're going, I think there are idols, there are examples of people,
right,
that
inspiration
shows you. Yeah, right. It's like, oh, I want to be like this, doesn't make sense until you see somebody who's like that. And
right,
then you go, okay, I want to be like them, not like this, like them. And I think that's just an interesting element to that.
Yeah, and I think the reason why we see Rowley... Well, I think a role that Rowley plays, at least in the narrative structure of this, is that he doesn't have that older role model.
Yeah.
And so we see him being himself. Maybe not an actualized self.
Yeah.
But a self without this kind of like influence that
and
has to exist.
Exactly. And it's interesting that Rowley is the one who brings the life back to the party, right?
I don't think it is.
No, I think it's interesting. That's what I'm saying. Like, because I think what it is it's Rowley's authenticity juxtaposed to Greg and Roderick's lack of authenticity.
Need to kind of be the life of the party.
And it's like that. And that's actually true in real life too. Like, obviously, like when you go to a party and you don't know a lot of people, like there's just the social, like, you know, nervousness that you're going to get. Like, and that's obviously natural, but there's something, and I think a lot of us probably have experiences, whether we've seen this happen or whether we've been this with you specifically. It's just somebody being exactly who they are unabashedly.
Are you saying I do that?
Oh, yes.
Oh, well.
Being who you are unabashedly, that's something that draws people in because it's charismatic.
Yeah.
And that also allows them to feel less, I believe, self-conscious about who they are and everything. And it's like... Like, well, you know, at the Light the Fountain event, right?
Yeah.
When you were right before
maybe you guys are going to see that.
Yeah, yeah, whoever's editing this, put a little bit of that in there. Like, right here.
Anyways.
Put it where the autofocus box is, because you can see that.
Yeah, okay.
Whoever's viewing can't.
Yeah.
Whoever's editing can't either.
Yeah, that was the joke. Okay, so.
Here, I'll draw it for you.
Anyways,
hey, that was pretty good.
There's something about that draws in people, whether they know you or not. And like I was saying, like,
it's funny when you see event, you know, like, 220-pound guy shake his ass.
Well, that, I mean, that too. But again, it's just it's the idea that somebody is able to what am I trying to say? Somebody accepts who they are enough to be a little bit vulnerable with everybody else. And I think that draws people in, whether they know them or not, you know, because I wasn't there during this part because I had to work. And that was right before you guys left to go to, you know, a bar without
playing games. That's personal stuff you're putting in.
Well, I'm just saying, it's okay.
Yeah, but we did invite Kyle.
Yeah.
Well,
I was told you were at work.
I mean, I mean, it's cool. It's cool. I mean, I know you guys were there later than I actually was.
Bye again, Chris.
I know you guys were there later than when I actually worked, but, you know, it's okay. Like, you didn't have to invite me. Like, it's like, whatever.
Yeah. Anyway.
I don't think about it every day, so.
Hey!
But, anyways.
What time are we?
I don't know. But.
Plenty.
Anyways, that was the point that I was making, is that, like, in that specific instance, that's something that reminds me.
No, and you know what? And I'll be honest. There are some things that Rowley does where it's like, all right, bro, you got to chill out a little bit.
Yeah, well, he's very much he doesn't have that countercultural spirit in him.
Yeah, at all. And you know why? We just said this because he doesn't have the icon to look at, the object to look at that is that has suffered from, I mean, potentially, like, just high school.
He's not fighting to stand out within his own home, so why would he think that he'd have to fight to stand out anywhere else?
That's true, that's true.
That's true.
And I think a lot of it is, and this is not true with every only child, but, like, I guess in Rowley's case, like, well, if you are, of course, like, a middle child, you're it's always a competition.
Yeah.
With your siblings. Because
you got both compared sides. To both
yeah. Right. But with Rowley, he's so comfortable with being himself because it works for him.
Yeah.
And so, because he doesn't try so hard to impress people, that in itself impresses people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, yeah, absolutely.
And when again, it's that authenticity.
When he does the dance with his mom at the end of the first one.
Yeah.
Dude, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I will say, when he wears, what happens? Oh, the teacher is like, oh, and there's one that I want to be read aloud, Greg Heffley, and Rowley just goes,
he's like, yeah, you did so good. Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it's great. I want to talk about kind of middle school, and I think the emergence of this collective understanding of social placing, or placement, I should say, social placement. Like, because you know how, and maybe this is a bit too subjective to talk about, but like in elementary school, which I would define as like up to fourth grade, right? Like fourth grade is elementary, yeah, and then fifth and sixth is middle, seventh, eighth, junior high, then afterwards is high school. What? Right?
Well,
that's how it was broken down at my school.
So what? That's how that's it was funky. For me too. But I still just think of fifth through eighth grade being middle school.
Generally, okay, I mean, sure. Generally, up till fifth grade, is elementary school.
That's not how it was for me.
And 6, 7, 8 is middle school. 9 through 12 is high school.
Okay.
In most places.
Okay. Regardless of that, but anyways, there when you're in the elementary school, I don't. Like, you have, like, your friends, right?
Right.
And you have people that you that you don't get along with. I don't think bullying is more prevalent in elementary schools, and I kind of wish I'd looked that up, actually. But I would imagine that bullying is less prevalent in elementary schools,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But there's certainly, and again, this is subjective, but there's not as big of an emphasis on who's who and, you know, being the popular kid and all stuff like that. Or at least, in my experience, that's not the case. And I don't see that often in the people that I do know. So I could be wrong in that, but I don't think it's emphasized
in the movie least. And even in real life, that like the social hierarchy isn't really like introduced by the school until middle school, because you don't have like class favorites of the yearbook until you go into like middle school. I never saw it in elementary school.
Okay. I don't remember like elementary school yearbooks enough to comment.
Oh, okay. So. Did your yearbook ever have the thing where it, like most studious or like
my high school did that.
Yeah. My middle school did that.
I'll say this. I have never once looked at a yearbook.
Really?
I mean, because I always got one because my mom wanted one. And I would look through it and find myself and see if I was in any of the pictures. And then after that, I didn't care.
Well, I'm going to talk about it real quick because I think it is important, because Greg mentions it in this movie, but especially in the first movie, part of his goal is that he is trying to get so popular, so recognized that he lands a spot in the highlights of the yearbook.
And in the first movie.
In the first movie, but even in the second one, he's still talking about, oh, I got class clown in the bag.
Right.
And even in my actual middle school, they had things at the end of the yearbook where it's like, you know, class clown, most studious, you know, most athletic.
Right. Because that's around the time that you're hitting puberty. Yeah. You're starting to develop into an individual.
But that even being in the yearbook just officially sets that competition.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. And we can argue whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, which you can take either side and be right,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Because that's one of those, like, it's rough, but it's necessary kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or at least
that's how I feel about it.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, middle school, it sucks for everybody, right? Okay. Obviously. But
it didn't suck that bad for me.
Well, don't worry. You had the rest of your life.
You were the kind of person that I hated then.
Yeah. But anyways. Why? But like I was saying, is like in elementary school, you don't have that social, like, hierarchy and order. There was the teachers and the adults, and then there were the kids. And you had your friends, and maybe you had people you didn't like. But that was basically it. When you enter middle school, it's, again, I almost say it's like an awakening. It's almost like the development of your, almost your consciousness in a sense.
I think it's the first time in your life that you go, I'm an adult.
I would say it's more so the first time in your life where you start to act as an individual person. And I think individuality inherently breeds competition.
Well, what age are people when they go to middle school?
They're around like 12.
And what do we say about 12-year-olds? That's when they develop abstract thought.
Yeah. Well, again, like that's also like the starting of puberty and everything. Yeah. It's literally your body shaping you into the person you're going to become.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite lines from the first Spider-Man movie. That takes place in high school. But Uncle Ben's sitting down. He's like, these are the years where you are becoming the person you are going to be the rest of your life. And I'm like, that's powerful. Like, because that's why you have to take real careful notes of how you act and who you are, because otherwise you'll develop into somebody completely unlikable at the very least. But again, I think there's something about being in grades like 5 through 12 is what I would say is middle to high school. And there's almost an overemphasis on social status. It's I think a compensation, because it's like, again, it's like, it's imagine like not knowing at all social anything, like sociality, like you just know to interact with people. You don't consider hierarchies or anything like that. Fifth grade, middle school hits, boom. Now suddenly that's the thing. Everybody has their cliques. There are the popular kids. There are the, you know, that's when people start going into school sanctioned sports like football and stuff. There are the jocks. There are the cheerleaders. There's, you know, there's all of that starts to get, you start to be interested in, you know, girls or guys, depending on, you know, whatever. I mean, like that's the beginning of growing up. Right. And I think there's somewhat of an overemphasis on that. And I think that's where a lot of the drama of that time period that emerges. And I think that's why it's so fun or whatever to have movies set during that time. And I think that's why most kid geared movies are set during that time. They're not set during kindergarten through fourth grade. They're not set in college. They're set during the time in which there is this period where you don't know anything.
You're
thrown into a world where you need to. You don't know anything and you're thrown into a world where you need to during those times. And I think that's why it's so interesting to see that on film. And I think that's why most kid stories are centered on that. And obviously, like, there's the fact that most kids who are watching TV are about that age. So.
And you're extremely impressionable.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And again, like, that's, you know, that's, and I think that's part of why this film is called Roderick Rules. Number one, because.
Roderick Rules, baby.
Roderick Rules, as in, like, yo, I'm Roderick and I rule. But also Roderick Rules, as in, yo, I'm Roderick and these are my rules.
Also, like, I mean, in the half of the movie where they get along, he tries to teach him how to get through.
Well, he says
with minimal effort.
Yeah.
He says
how he got through.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily right, but anyway, continue, Jake.
Yeah, it's doing the easy thing.
Well, he says secrets of an easy life.
Yeah.
Which I think is important, and this section of the film is important, because Greg is watching Roderick with what Roderick knows without knowing what Roderick knows.
Yeah.
Without knowing these tips, right, that Roderick has developed, but trying to replicate that.
Yeah.
It's like tasting a really delicious dish. And then being like, I want to recreate this, but I don't know any of the ingredients.
Yeah, well, it's like it's developing law in general. Like, because there, before you develop like a set, like, because law, all it is just whatever the most moral action is put into words, right? and that's what law is on its face, right? And I think before you develop a system of law, you have to have gone through these repeated interactions with separate events, and then you abstract something from that collective, right? That's what Moses did in the when they were going around to Mount Sinai, is that he's dealing with all these specific complaints of the Israelites, or I guess the Hebrew people at this point. And they're like, and he's having to figure out what's the right thing to do in between this. And then when he goes up to the mountain, from that set, he's able to abstract the Ten Commandments. He says, every problem that you just had, these are the rules you follow, and that's the law. Like, that's how law works, is that you see things before you in individual circumstances, and then from there you're able to articulate a set of common rules.
Yes. Are you thinking?
No, I
read. You look like you're thinking.
I heard that swallow.
Yeah, no, I read that. That was a
pronounced swallow. Can we go back and zoom in on that? Thank you.
Yeah, zoom in on the audio.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know all about pronounced swallows.
Enhance.
Claire.
What I think, another thing I think is pretty kind of like flies under the radar, but I think it's important. We're going to take a look at Ready Player One right quick. What's his name?
I haven't seen
Ego.
It. No, Ego's the bad guy from Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Well, you haven't seen Ready Player One?
I have not.
You have the book? Oh. Are you interested?
We got
we got to watch Knock Knock, and we have to watch Ready Player One. Yeah. Okay, hold on. What's his name in Ready Player One? The old guy who Gregarious.
James
Halliday.
I know what happens.
Oh yeah,
James Halliday. Oh, that sucks. James Halliday. He says he's talking about the Oasis. It's the only reality. It's real. It's the only place you can get a decent meal. And in this, the grandfather says, because they're talking about watching TV, and the only thing the grandfather watches is like security cam footage.
This is real life.
Yeah. And he goes, this is real life.
Which is hilarious.
Which happens right before Greg has a conversation with Holly.
Yeah.
And the reason I think this is important is because what we're talking about with authenticity with Rowley is that, like, that's it. It's real life. You have to be yourself. You know, and I know that may be a jump, but that's why I'm saying it flies under the radar. But but the same message is present.
Yeah,
and I think that's why I think this is part of partially a good ending, is because we do finally have all these things. So it's hinting at, like, you got to be real, dude. You got to be real. And he finally accepts going on stage and being a goofball, even though there is a little bit of hesitation. And reluctance.
There always is.
Right.
Mm. Whenever you're facing, you know, the unknown, there's going to be a natural response of fear or trepidation. And I think fighting through that is more powerful than never having to deal with it in the first place. That's why I hate the movie Captain Marvel, because she doesn't combat anything internal. Yeah. There's not a single thing internal other than lost memory that she's combating. And that's not powerful. It's not powerful to never struggle, because everybody...
No, I mean, that's why, that's literally that's one of the basic concepts of filmmaking, of storytelling, of life, bro.
Yeah.
Is struggle. There,
you have to struggle, otherwise, how is that relatable if you don't?
Well, because failure, too, is the best teacher. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's Yoda, bro. Yeah. Yoda's always right, unless it's the Clone Wars.
Failure, greatest teacher, that is.
So he goes through that too. And I think, and I also think, you know, it's that sacrifice through that as well, that not only brings him closer to Rowley, right? His supposed best friend.
That's a fucked up relationship, by the way.
It is. Oh, it absolutely is. But here we are, two movies later.
I forget, why exactly finally, do they make up at the end?
Because
of the first one.
Of the first one? I think Greg apologizes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's something like that.
Isn't it like...
Oh, shit.
I know we're getting into the books, but in the...
Yeah,
in
we're the almost at time.
We'll cut.
Woo! Continue.
I forgot what I was
saying. Die Everyone Would Get the Ugly Truth. You forget what happened, but something happens in that. You read it. It's the last book you read.
Oh, yeah, so...
Not the last Die Everyone Would Get book. the last book you read.
The fifth, well, I think when I read it, he took a break for a little bit because that felt like we were nearing the end of the series with The Ugly Truth, because I cannot remember what happens in it, but like Greg and Rowley's friendship suffers a really bad toll. Mm-hmm. And I think like Greg is an absolute piece of shit in that book.
Oh, dude, he's all of them.
Well, he's in all of them, but the long haul, but especially in five,
is the ninth book in the series.
Is that the final one?
That's the
there's 13 or something.
No, but it's still going on. But what's funny though is that that's the third movie. Mm-hmm. So they skip seven movies.
No. The third movie is Dog Days.
Yeah.
The fourth one was the reboot. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which I think is kind of weird. God,
get caught up on your Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
They skipped book three, which is when he goes to book to
the last straw. Yeah.
I forgot exactly what happened in that.
What's book. The next one? Dog Days is the fourth one, right?
Dog Days is the fourth one. The fifth one was.
Is it still Devin Boston?
I remember that one was particularly good.
But anyway, I'm going to have to watch this now. A Wimp Will Rise, The Long Haul.
Anyway,
what happens?
I forgot where I was going with
the relationship.
I forgot where I was going.
I mean, the point is that Greg is a really bad friend.
Yeah. Until the fifth book that he really started thinking to himself, I'm a bad person. I remember book five kind of ended with that.
Which I think.
What grade was that set in?
It's either six or seven. Sorry, seventh
grade. It's got to be high school.
No.
Because this one is seventh grade. That's the fifth book.
I don't know what they do forward, but there's 13 of these books.
Okay.
Yeah.
Regardless, I think part of the reason why he is a bad friend is having Roderick as a role model. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And also, and again, this is something I can attest to.
It's his opportunity to be Roderick.
Right. But because Roderick treats him a certain way, he treats other people the same way, because that's how he's seen how people act, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which sucks.
Yeah. But and that's the importance of...
He is ultimately responsible.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's the importance of picking a proper role model, too.
But again, I think when you're at this age, when you have that brother, that is harder to do because...
Well, I understand, but I'm still making the case that that's the point.
Yeah.
And that's just... one of those things. Eventually, I think you'll either come to a realization because you're in what is it called, in when you look in within yourself, what is that called,
introspection?
If you have enough of an introspective mind, then maybe you'll come to that, or maybe you'll hurt somebody enough that'll make you rethink who you are.
Either way, though, there comes a time when
hopefully, yeah,
or else you end up,
Billy, as Billy,
who's Billy,
the guitar player guy.
Oh yes,
you waste away.
Do you make enough money to live on? Yeah, if you live in your mom's basement. That's kind of like, which one is it? Ed and Eddie. One's the? If you live in your mother's basement.
That's Ed.
Ed? Okay.
Oh, dude, I fucking love Ed.
I wasn't allowed to watch
Butter it. Buttered toast.
Dude, really?
No.
Dude, Ed and Eddie was my shit.
I also didn't like the art style.
Yeah, but
I love
the art style. And maybe that's why your humor is... I love the art style.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's why it's...
Yes. Yeah. Well, my humor devolved into, into Eric Andre. Meat Canyon, yes, but before then, it was already fucked up because why does Kids You Know, RIP Trevor Moore, by the way, Trevor Moore.
That's funny. I'll tell you in a minute. Okay. That's really funny.
So I thought you said something.
I didn't. It has to do with a new name for a candy. 10 bucks.
We're cutting that out.
No, we're not.
Yes, we are.
No, we're not.
Nobody get it.
No, exactly. So that's why we're not going to cut it out. All right. I think we did pretty good, guys. Do you have anything else that you want to?
Yes. Yes, a big portion. Okay. We said what this movie was about what makes a relationship sustainable.
Oh, we didn't talk about that.
Talk about that.
Okay.
I did. That okay. I did. I talk about it a little
bit.
What
I think makes a relationship sustainable is sacrifice.
I said that.
Well, yeah, you were talking about in Raleigh. I'm talking about in a general purpose.
I said that.
Okay. But it's... Greg sacrifices his pride, essentially, both for his brother and for Raleigh, but it was mainly for his brother, and it just wound up helping Raleigh as well. Because the sacrificial element of a relationship is what makes that relationship stronger. Because, I mean, if you're giving up something for a relationship to work, you're more likely to want to see it, you know, work out. And that's something that that ancient people figured out a long, long time ago. That's why they sacrificed goats in the first place to gods, is because the whole idea of sacrifice, of slaughtering an animal for your deity, was not just so that they could eat the food, although, yes, that's the mythological reason. The point is, it's more psychological than that. It's, you're giving up something that is of merit to you.
Right.
Something that, in this case, in this
is
kind
worth
of world,
something.
Well, not only that, but can keep you alive. You give up a part of that to something beyond yourself. And it's doing that, you know, in, let's say in the Greek tradition, the gods won't smite you, right? If you do that, you give something to Zeus, and Zeus won't hit you with lightning bolt out of the sky.
Like Percy Jackson.
Right. And so it's that element of sacrifice that defines something that can be reiterated,
right?
And something that is worth investing in. And I think that's a really powerful motif.
So there's I always forget. There's a story.
The Green Knight.
Hey, that's not about love, though. Although he did some loving. Hey,
love in his hands.
Keep talking. Give me a second.
That scene was very unsettling.
The Green Knight was kind of wild.
It was.
I like it, but it's one of those things.
It wasn't what I was expecting.
One, the theater, the exit light in the theater was really bright, and or the movie itself was super dark. Like the exit light, like
it was
for
the movie.
Yeah. Well, I know that, but the exit light didn't help because I felt like it was like right in my eye and it was making my pupils like dilate more than they needed to.
So okay, there's a story.
So I don't think I'd ever be able to watch that movie during the day.
From a rabbi called Abraham Twersky, and I always forget who it is, but I looked up Fish Love Rabbi and it came up. But anyway, he and this is really kind of what I, when I first started developing my definition of what love is, that some of you saw in Shrektober, I did the same thing. But basically, the story is he talks about how he had a conversation with a man who was cooking a fish, mm-hmm, or eating fish, and the rabbi says, "Young man, why are you eating that fish?" And the guy goes, "Because I love fish." And the rabbi says, "Oh, you love the fish. That's why you took it out of the water, out of its home, killed it, and cooked it." And the rabbi says, "Don't tell me that you love fish. You love yourself. And because the fish tastes good to you, that's why you took it."
Yeah, because you love how it helps you.
Right.
Yeah.
And then he said the real definition of love would be if you let that fish live and sacrificed eating the fish, and then it goes more into that, but that's kind of the same thing with sacrifice. Love is giving, like you said, giving that part of yourself so that somebody else can thrive. But in the same sense, somebody does that for you too. That's why the relationship works,
right? Exactly,
because you both sacrifice for each other.
It's both giving to each other, and that's what that's why in sacrifices over the course of just religious history have evolved, I would say, to more profound significance. Because originally, like I said, it was sacrificing to a god so the god wouldn't kill you, right?
Yeah.
You were literally getting that in return. And then it later became, under the Jewish tradition, it was sacrificing in order to show God that you were willing to give a part of yourself. The same idea with circumcision, right? It's literally giving a physical part of yourself, you know, to God. Showing devotion, right? And then in the Christian tradition, sacrifice turned into a more abstract idea where, you know, Jesus sacrifices his life for the sins of everybody so that you don't have to do that anymore. You can live your life. You can be free.
And I think it's important too, and I'm sure that you all know, not only did Jesus sacrifice, but the Father as well.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the Father gave his only Son.
Okay, I got you.
That's what I'm saying.
I got you.
So
yeah, but right, it became more of a psychological kind of sacrifice. It wasn't that you were now sacrificing goats and sheep and stuff to God. It was that you were sacrificing that which is sinful.
Whoa. You just blew my mind a little bit. It's something I've always known, but it's one of those things where, like, until you kind of, like, have that moment, yo, bro, Jeebus was a huge sacrifice. A man completely without sin who did so much good for the world that time, and then killed him.
And even if you're like atheistic, right? What's so interesting and important about the story of Jesus is, if nothing else, it paved the way for.
Dude, I hope Claire sucks your chin.
If nothing else, it paved the way for future progress. Because it's like, if you look at the whole history of mankind, there's this steady progression towards individualism and towards natural law and towards sacrificing personality, or not personal, personality. God, I'm getting completely distracted. But
hey, how's it feel?
Well, I'm not reading. It was from also me. I'm not reading from goddamn Wikipedia.
I wasn't reading from it. I use it as kind of a guide if I get
editor,
lost.
Editor, whoever's editing this, Jared, take a screenshot from Chris's computer while he was reading the Wikipedia and put it right here.
See it word for word.
Yeah. And then have also side by side to that, have a recording from Chris's computer camera where he's looking at it.
His eyes are just...
And then zoom in to his eyeball and enhance where you can see the words. Do that for me, will you? Okay, thanks.
I don't even know what I was talking about at this point, but I guess I've made my point. I'd have to backtrack a lot. So
yeah,
I feel like I've said everything that I wanted to say about the movie.
Cool. I think I did too. There's one thing I do want to say.
I don't know why I thought it was funny.
Okay. Don't touch my knee. That scared me so bad. I was like, what just touched me?
There is one thing I want to say though. When they come out of the basement, Rowley and Greg, I forget who it was, but one of them says, like, now we can do teenage things.
Yeah.
Now we can do teenage things.
Ding dang.
Oh,
which also, I mean, that's kind of,
you put your lips on the microphone.
And I think that kind of proves the, or at least gives example to the point that we were making about, you know, is that I idealizing your brother as like what you could be when you grow up, right? It's like, now it's not that, hey, now we can do adult things. It's now we can do teenage things.
Yeah.
Right. So I think, I don't want to look at you when you have that.
Oh, also, when they were looking at Holly Hills in the beginning, was it the beginning?
I don't know.
So in the beginning at the roller rink. Yeah. It's Greg and Rowley again, and they're talking to each other about Holly Hills, and Holly like comes over, skates over, and she's like, hey Greg, you're blocking the exit. And there's like this pause, and Rowley has like the fake magic wand. She says that, and then the flowers come out. There's like, hey, you're blocking the exit.
Boom. Yeah.
And Jeff Kinney, we're looking at you.
Well, he didn't make the movie.
He wrote the book.
He made the movie.
Okay.
He made the movie. Ready or not scale.
I'm not done yet. If you rearrange the letters in Jeff Kinney, you get Greg Heffley.
See, that wasn't even worth saying.
It wasn't.
Yes, it was. Also.
Ready or not scale.
Also.
Ready.
Also.
Or not.
I love Steve Zahn so much. That's his name, right?
The dad.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, dude. He's got this energy about him that is just every time he's on screen, I'm like, this is the best scene.
Well, have you seen White Lotus yet?
No, is he in that?
Yes, he is one of the main characters. He's really good in it. Although
that just made me want to watch it even more.
The first scene that you see him, it is a close-up shot on his hand, on his dick, like pulling it up to where you can see his balls.
It's a children's
and then it
podcast.
Pans out and it's him. And I'm like, oh my god, I have to watch his movie for this podcast with his penis in my brain.
This is a children's podcast?
Yeah. No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Well, then
I don't think I want to watch
it. Then the way you started this episode is very problematic.
Sorry to Jason's HBO Max girl. I'm not watching this.
Mary?
Series.
What's your full name? Meredith?
No, it's Mary HBO Max girl.
Oh, okay.
Well, not yet.
Anyway, yeah, every time he's in this film, he's just kind of like...
Yeah, no, I love him.
He's just like the suburban dad who like regrets his life and every decision he's ever made. But he's like, I don't even know. It's just great.
He's so accepting of it.
He is. And he just
well,
like,
he's the only one in the film that's not looking for something beyond what he has.
Or that and Rally.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And I'd say anybody in the Heffley family that's, like, you know, is cognizant.
Yeah.
You know what he is? He's Jerry from Rick and Morty.
You know what? I don't know if I agree with that.
I
think he plays the same role.
The
Morty? Kyle.
Yeah.
He plays the same role.
The Civil War reenactment hobby is very much Jerry to me.
Yeah. Hey! Don't touch these.
Is it ever like reveal what he does for a living?
Nah, he just probably works in an office.
All right,
Ready or Not scale.
Ready or Not. Did this have
this
any?
This is
blows?
A 5 out of 5. Everybody blew up at the party.
Let's explain what the Ready or Not scale is for.
We already.
It's
how many blowups?
If you see the movie Ready or Not, a lot of people blow up in it. We use that as a reference to see how many explosions are in.
Spoilers. The idea is that they don't know what it means.
Yeah, well.
But we say it all the time. We're like, how many explosions?
Yeah, but they don't know why.
There are explosions in that movie. How many explosions are in this movie? None. It's Diary of the Wimpy Kid. 0 out of 5.
Unless they see the movie.
Okay.
0 out of 5.
No, I'm going to give it a 1.
Okay.
Because
I'm gonna give your mom my 1.
You're 1 inch. Oh. Yeah.
Times 2
is still.
Did you fart again?
Yeah.
Times 2 times 0.
No. Times 2 times number 2.
It's still 0 cuz there's a 0 in there now.
Yeah.
Okay.
1. Because of the rolling rink scene when Holly comes up and Rally's flowers pop.
No, that doesn't count.
One of them might have been a cherry flower.
If the stuff in Order 66 doesn't count on the Ready or Not scale, then I don't want to hear you talking about a goddamn wand. Okay.
We gave that a 3.
Yeah, but that should have been a 5.
No.
Yes.
Because you don't see people blow up.
It's a wand with flowers coming out.
And right. They pop. All right. 1 out of 5, boys.
Hey, I'm sorry.
Is that it?
Yeah. Wait. We got a cut before we do this.
No, we don't.
Yeah, we do.
No, we don't.
Yeah, we do.
Chris, don't
yeah,
do
we
it.
Do. Yeah, we do. Yeah,
Chris,
we do.
Stop.
Yeah, we do.
Chris.
It's not bright enough.
Wait, we're not rapping right here.
Yeah, we are.
No, we're not.
Yeah, we are.
Guys.
I don't like it either. Like, I'm just going to sit down.
I'm sitting down.
Here's the thing. The mic's over here. What the fuck are you doing? You know, I shouldn't have said anything. I should have let him be over there by himself.
I can't get back over here now.
Okay. Well, I'll just move the mic.
The belly in the screen enough to auto-focus
it's... All right. Dum 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 dum
Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick rules. I'ma go and break the rules on the playground. I'm gonna break my leg and I'm gonna go and push a girl in a wheelchair down a ditch. Cause I am a bitch. I'm a bitch of a person. I have a stitch in my heart. I'm heartless. I'm the weekend. I'm gonna go and see my dad on the weekend because my parents divorced and my mom has custody. That's why I like to cuss at everybody and be a piece of shit. My name's Greg Heffley. That's it.
Fuck!
Oh, hey, good. You ended it with a rhyme this time. And he didn't mention once that he was shitting himself.
Do your leprechaun voice. Stout and sauerkraut!